Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched a central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my faith to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Does anybody know what this crypto thing means? Nope. To me, it sounds like the new get-broke-quick
scheme. Okay,
hey.
Well, welcome, and you're listening to Tokens Radio
and
Show.
And we're live radioing again. Just a slight tech problem.
Yeah,
hang on, everybody.
We're attempting to play a cut, which is not playing right now.
Here we go.
Defined as a pure fiat currency. When a country agrees to have its currency used as a reserve currency, it puts itself in a tough position. To keep the global economy functioning, the country may be required to inject a large amount of currency in circulation. And as I mentioned earlier, this can lead to higher inflation rates within the country itself. If the reserve currency becomes very popular compared to other currencies, its exchange rate will rise. While this may sound like a positive, it actually makes domestic exporting industries less competitive. This ultimately leads to a trade deficit for the currency issuing country, even if it benefits the world as a whole.
Well, welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Tuesday, February 11th. I'm Christy.
I'm Linda.
And we're broadcasting from KCNR Studios in Redding, California, here on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And we're streaming online at KCNR1460.com. You can follow us on X at Tokens Radio Show for updates and commentary. And that was a little segment, just a little brief introduction to the Triffin Dilemma, which we're going to talk a little bit about.
Yeah.
It's significant and kind of all over the news lately.
Like, there's a lot of news lately.
Oh my gosh.
Everybody that's keep up with it.
Yeah, you bet. I was telling Linda, this was kind of a difficult show to organize because of everything that's going on. It's just, it's warp speed news out there. What can
mm-hmm.
I say?
It is.
Yep.
But we'll get through it and it'll be okay.
We want to welcome Ben into the
good evening, ladies.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate you producing the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
And chime in anytime you like, Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Questions? Comments?
Yeah,
anything like that.
Well, we have this other cut that we're going to play for you, and then we'll go ahead and kind of set up the rest of the program. So here
All
we
right.
go.
The widely quoted annual deficit number is $2 trillion. In layman terms, the U.S. spends $2 trillion more than we pull in as revenue. That's obviously not good. But we got even worse news recently. The U.S. government is not running a $2 trillion deficit. They're actually running a $2.5 trillion deficit based on the annual run rate from the first 4 months of the 2025 fiscal year. Geiger Capital points out that the first 4 months of FY 2025 produced a deficit of $838 billion. That's $306 billion more than the deficit recorded in the same period last fiscal year. We're running a $2.5 trillion annual deficit. Now, the most shocking aspect of these numbers is not the nominal values, but rather the rate of growth. It is unsustainable if our annual deficit is growing 25% year over year or more. This explains why we are adding approximately $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days. Thankfully, we have the Department of Government Efficiency working around the clock to stop wasteful government spending. Here are the various savings DOGE was able to create for the American taxpayer yesterday. The Department of Agriculture terminated 18 contracts for a total of $9 million. Department of Education terminated 29 DEI training grants totaling $101 million. And the Department of Education also terminated 89 contracts worth $881 million. This means that the agency tasked with eliminating government waste was able to stop approximately $1 billion of spending in the last 24 hours. These $1 billion days are a great start, but we're going to need even larger cuts to get to a balanced budget. But let's stick with the national debt for a second. We know the higher the number goes, the worse off Americans are. But there's a weird solution in Bitcoin that has presented itself over the last 15 years. We know inflation is bad for people who hold dollars. So what do smart people do? They exchange their cash for investment assets. Now, inflation works for the smart people rather than working against them. The same is true for Bitcoin and the debt. Porter Stansberry said it best, their debt is your problem until you own Bitcoin. The moment you own Bitcoin, their debt is your greatest asset.
Ooh, that's huge.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we've talked about how Bitcoin just absorbs inflation. It's kind of like a huge whale swimming in a small pond and just sucking it all up, and the whale's beginning bigger and bigger, bigger. And that's really what it does to all of this liquidity that's into the marketplace. So if you are the smart investor, you're going to take that liquidity and buy your Bitcoin.
Right. And what makes it hard for some people is it definitely, you know, got to flip your brain around kind of because we were brought up a little bit different, or people are taught, you know, real estate. So
gold,
yeah, gold, silver. So they got to kind of like, you know, do a 180 in their brain of thinking about the wealth piece.
Well, the whole Bitcoin issue is a mind twister. It is
it's a
completely different way of thinking and listening things. If you listen to Max Kaiser, I mean, he even had talked about how difficult it was for him to get his head wrapped around all of these concepts that, that we're trying very hard to convey.
Right.
You may have heard that President Trump has been busy signing executive orders.
Oh, really?
And he signed an executive order just a few days ago to form a sovereign wealth fund. And we're going to talk about what that means for our overall economy and more tariff talk as the show progresses. So we're going to break it all down. But first, why don't we go ahead and get a market update and a word from our sponsor.
All right. Currently, Bitcoin is at $95,882. IBIT ETF is $54.11. Excuse me. ETH is at 2,604, XRP at 241, and MicroStrategy is at 319.46. So the markets are all kind of down a little bit, you know, and there could be several reasons for that right now. I think everything's kind of like leveled off or gone down a little bit across the board.
I think it has a lot to do with the employing the new monetary policies, the tariffs, implications. And also, you know, MicroStrategy is rebranding itself. It's now called Strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's been, you know, people shifting things around, you know, on their books and on their balance sheets. So that always affects the markets.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but it's not anything to worry about.
No, not at all.
So, our friends at Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators, sponsors today's show. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. Excuse me. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or call them 530-276-9771.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, they're good over there.
They're great people. They're all about medical freedom. This is why they sponsor our program. It's you might not see the connection between Bitcoin and their business, but it's all about freedom.
Freedom.
That's the key.
Yeah, and we're seeing more about freedoms.
Yes, indeed.
Anyhow.
Well, we talked earlier about Trump announcing a sovereign wealth fund, and that's being helmed by a major Bitcoin maximalist holding billions of dollars in Bitcoin. And this maximalist is in the Trump administration. You'll hear a little bit later about that. While trade wars rage worldwide, the Triffin dilemma unfolds in real time, and we're going to start breaking that down a little bit more. And Bitcoin decouples further from every other asset class. The landscape is transforming rapidly. Have you positioned yourself for what's coming? Hurley explains.
Let's give a listen to this.
Okay.
The great trade war of 2025 started and ended all within one day. Trump announced immediate 25% trade tariffs on the U.S.'s two closest geographic allies, Mexico and Canada, which caused crypto markets to absolutely tank over the weekend and Bitcoin to drop about 10%. Broader markets reacted early Monday with similar size downturns, but the panic was short-lived as leaders of both countries were able to come to terms with President Trump later in the day and the tariffs were put on hold for 30 days. Bitcoin then gave us the God candle none of us asked for as it quickly rebounded back up 10% within hours. Quick note here, Bitcoin was worth $10,000 per coin just 5 years ago, and today it moves up by $10,000 within hours. That's some remarkable growth. In hindsight, this was clearly a very effective negotiation tactic from President Trump, who was able to secure immediate and widespread border reinforcement from both countries to stop the flow of deadly drugs into the U.S. Whether the threat of tariffs and escalating trade wars has been completely avoided is unclear, but I would suspect that this has just delayed the inevitable. Trump has stated many times publicly that he feels the U.S. is getting ripped off on the global stage in terms of the increasing levels of trade deficits the country has shouldered over the last several decades. And this reality comes largely as a result of the U.S. dollar acting as the world reserve currency. This is where the Triffin dilemma comes in. The Triffin dilemma is a concept in international economics that describes the inherent conflict between a country's national economic interests and its role as the issuer of the global reserve currency. As the issuer of the current global reserve currency, the U.S. must run deficits to supply the world with dollars. But doing this hollows out the domestic economy, forcing the U.S. to import more than it exports. The global demand for dollars keeps the dollar artificially strong, making U.S. goods less competitive and pushing manufacturing overseas. Since the U.S. dollar was made the world reserve currency following World War II, the system has worked well and created tons of economic growth and prosperity globally. But now, cracks have appeared. As global debt levels soar and the increasing U.S. trade deficit hollows out the manufacturing base, the whole system is being called into question. So the Trump admin, through tariffs, are trying to reshore production in America and weaken the dollar, as a weaker U.S. dollar makes U.S. exports cheaper and more attractive. Trump may also be attempting to force the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates faster. Trump has publicly said many times he thinks interest rates should go down faster. And so these tariffs could be an attempt to force the Fed's hand through market uncertainty. Meanwhile, countries around the world no longer want to rely on the U.S. dollar for global trade. The BRICS nations are exploring alternatives and are actively selling U.S. treasuries and reducing their dollar reserves. It's looking more and more like the post-World War II economic order is crumbling, and that we're inevitably headed back towards a neutral reserve currency system, like we previously had with gold. And this is all happening as Bitcoin is undergoing a rapid transformation into a cornerstone of financial infrastructure. This shift is driven by regulatory changes, institutional adoption, and growing recognition of Bitcoin as a superior form of collateral to U.S. treasuries. U.S. treasuries have inflation risk, duration risk, and counterparty risk. Bitcoin, in contrast, is liquid 24/7, instantly verifiable, totally scarce, and free from counterparty risk. Bitcoin solves the age-old Triffin dilemma, and it's just a matter of time before nation-states around the world understand this. And as far as its positioning in the financial system, Bitcoin continues to distance itself from speculative assets like altcoins. The gap between Bitcoin and the broader crypto market is widening, with Bitcoin attracting institutional and sovereign investment, while altcoins remain speculative. The Bitcoin ETFs, fair accounting rules, and bank custody rights are positioning it as a monetary base layer rather than a speculative bet. In the last 2 years, the Nasdaq is down 62% against Bitcoin. Ethereum, the second biggest crypto, is down 63%. The S&P 500, down 68%. Gold, down 70%. And long-term U.S. treasuries are down a whopping 82%. Bitcoin has clearly already separated itself from the pack. The question is, are you paying attention yet? So Bitcoin's adoption curve is accelerating due to financial system integration. As institutions, corporations, and sovereign entities realize they need Bitcoin, a supply shock is imminent. The risk is no longer holding Bitcoin. The real risk is not holding any at all. And nations around the world are beginning to get it. Several nations are well on their way to enacting a law to acquire Bitcoin as part of their reserves. So, reminder, it's not too late to front-run nation states. Okay, one more piece of news, and it's right on cue with what we've just talked about.
All right.
Well, we should be front-running this. This is the first time an average person can front-run a corporation, another country. I mean, it's huge if you think about that.
It's
the plebs that got the head start on this.
That's true.
The underbanked, you know, the one impoverished had the first opportunity to get in on this.
Yeah, and that's usually not the way things work, right? They're usually the last. We're the last,
right,
to be able to get in on this.
The plebs win.
Yeah. Once again. And that's the way it works. Anyway, Howard Lutnick, Commercial Secretary nominee, and the Strategic Wealth Fund is going to speak next. And this is huge. Just give a listen.
Trump signed an executive order calling for the creation of the first ever U.S. sovereign wealth fund. And who does he have leading the fund? His new Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick. Lutnick is a very public proponent of Bitcoin, even admitting in this interview that he holds hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin exposure.
I have hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay.
Okay. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars exposure to Bitcoin. And it will be billions. Every time Bitcoin dips, I'm going to be the buyer. What you're going to see is Cantor Fitzgerald is going to be the sponsor of Bitcoin into traditional finance. And so we will be the leader of it. But all the banks, after we do it and show people how to do it right, they'll all copy. And so the asset of Bitcoin will just, as it becomes more accepted, it will become more valuable.
That's the guy that is running the U.S. Sovereign Wealth Fund. Lutnick is also the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, and he announced at the Bitcoin 2024 conference that his bank is launching a $2 billion Bitcoin financing and lending business that would use Bitcoin as collateral for USD loans.
Cantor Fitzgerald is here to announce that we are launching a Bitcoin financing business. We will offer leverage to those who own Bitcoin. We are going to launch with $2 billion of lending. And once we put out the $2 billion of lending, we will go up in increments of $2 billion. You have to realize Cantor and BGC, its largest wholesaler, we finance and arrange vast amounts. And we are going to now build that ecosystem for Bitcoin. So the moral of the story is we are going to welcome Bitcoin into the financing family of the global financial markets, and Cantor Fitzgerald is going to be your sponsor.
Senator Cynthia Lummis, who authored the famous Bitcoin bill that calls for the U.S. Treasury to buy 1 million Bitcoin as part of a strategic reserve, tweeted this on the news of the U.S. Sovereign Wealth Fund creation. This is a big deal. So in summary, Bitcoin's reclassification from a high-risk asset to a financial cornerstone is happening in real time. The gradual phase of Bitcoin's monetization is over. We are now entering the suddenly phase, where institutions must race to accumulate Bitcoin before their competitors do. Meanwhile, the post-World War II monetary order is rapidly changing, and Bitcoin is poised to take the throne as a far superior global reserve currency by solving for the Triffin dilemma by aligning with the principles of a neutral global reserve asset without the drawbacks of the fiat-based system where the world is at the whims of any one country. So who knows how all of this will play out, but one thing is for sure, the next few years will be anything but boring. So secure your Bitcoin in cold storage, sleep easy, and enjoy the fireworks.
And get some popcorn.
There's lots of popcorn.
Yeah, I mean, just with what's been going on, the geopolitical environment is just, it's just shaping how everything is happening. Did you have any idea that, just listening to this, that Howard Lutnick may, do you think he had any inkling that he might have been part of the Trump administration?
Oh, I think so.
You think so? You think there were some discussions about that?
Yeah.
Because Trump wasn't even elected yet. The assassination attempt hadn't even happened at that time.
I think so because I don't know. I think since Biden got in before, I think Trump's been busy behind the scenes,
moving his
chess pieces around,
yeah,
checking them out, you know. I think he kind of does it in a 3D depth with some of it. So I think maybe, but who knows? Wouldn't it be nice to be a fly on the wall to know exactly if they had a conversation, you know, prior?
Cantor's a big player. I mean, they are the number one player.
Mm-hmm.
And to go ahead and be the first to go out and set up the lending environment for Bitcoin. That is, I mean, there's other lenders that were out there, and just that for them to be such a large financial institution of financial institutions on the private side of things. Right.
Right.
You know, that's just amazing.
I like the way you put, you know, now the race has began, you
right.
know. So are we doing the 50-yard dash, the 75 or the 100, or are we doing a relay here?
Right.
You know, for the banks to be trying to get their ducks in a row
right.
on this.
Sure. And, you know, they're going to be able to buy exponentially more than us plebs. But when you look at what us plebs have put away, right, that's exponentially large for us.
Yeah, but when you stop and look at, like before on our prior clip, whatever it was, 10 million, you know, whatever, how much they're buying, I was thinking, but we're still able to buy. No, we can't, may not be able to afford a whole Bitcoin, but we're still have it available to us.
Sure.
To buy, you know, like we do, set them and forget it or
sure.
whatever. And everybody still is in the game.
Yeah. And I don't think it, anybody will never be in the game because there will always be a market. And when you have the traders who, traders are going to trade, and they're in it just to it's a game.
Well, okay, yeah, it's like the stock market. It, you know, the buyers and the sellers and the movers.
It's like
the
what we talked about last week. You know, it's a game for many of the investment managers, and it's also their job in many cases, but it's not a personal thing. It's just they're moving money around, and maybe personally, you know, they're hodling, you know, for dear life, right? But, yeah, there's always going to be Bitcoin available. It's just a matter of to what degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because, I don't know, you don't look at other assets as much like that, or I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. My focus has gotten very narrow.
Maybe that's
Bitcoin.
One-sided.
Well, the Tripin effect, there's a commenter on X, his name is Jeff Park, and he came up with an interesting analysis of Trump's tariff strategy, and it got our attention, and his perspective reveals how understanding these tariffs provides the key to Bitcoin's trajectory in 2025, and he presents this as a highest conviction macro trade predicting the emergence of a Plaza Accord 2.0.
Right.
So his analysis centers on two crucial factors shaping today's tariff landscape. First, the Trifin dilemma, like we talked about, and the challenge there is of facing the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. This creates what economists call an exorbitant privilege for America, but it comes with a cost. And we must maintain a persistent trade deficit to supply the world with dollars. And our currency remains structurally overvalued.
Right. And then second, we have Trump's strategic approach. His tariff strategy isn't just about trade barriers. It's potentially aimed at engineering a new Plaza Accord, similar to the 1985 agreement that deliberately weakened the dollar. The goal? Achieving what seemed impossible, both a weaker dollar and lower interest rates.
Yeah, the implications are significant. Park argues that this could create a perfect storm for Bitcoin's value, and here's why. As both the U.S. and its trading partners navigate these changes, their policy responses from tax cuts to monetary stimulation could drive more investors towards cryptocurrency in our interconnected digital world, and Bitcoin stands to benefit from both sides of this economic equation.
Yeah, so
it's cool.
Yeah, so Park's bold conclusion, the impact of sustained tariffs on Bitcoin could be more dramatic than most analysts predict, potentially driving its value higher at an unprecedented pace.
Yeah, Bitcoin stands out as Park's key investment choice because he sees the U.S. dollar weakening while interest rates fall, a combination that, you know, many call impossible. This would both drive American and international investors towards Bitcoin, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
The U.S. investors would seek protection from a weaker dollar, while international investors would flee their devaluing currencies. Unlike past economic crises, today's digital world makes Bitcoin instantly accessible globally. That's really cool.
Yeah, that makes a big difference in this game.
So he predicts this dual pressure will drive Bitcoin's value higher at unprecedented speed as investors worldwide rush to protect their wealth. And this is in line with what Michael Saylor was saying as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's talking about $10 million Bitcoin.
I know. That it's just hard to even wrap your head around those kind of numbers for me.
Yeah.
You know, and people go, oh, do you think you can get any value in anything? It doesn't take a whole lot of anything when you start talking about them kind of numbers.
You know, you're talking about getting your head wrapped around these numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, millions used to be a big number. And then billions. Remember those analogies, and you'd see those images where you say, this is what $1 billion looks like, and it would show so many plane loads of dollars, right?
Or they showed the Earth, and they'd show how many times it would go around the Earth. Or
and then we're just playing with trillions like it's nothing.
I know.
Billions doesn't seem like it means much anymore. But we have to keep that in perspective. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Any way you slice the pie, folks.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. And a huge implications on people's lives. Huge, in many ways.
And the more we devalue, the harder it is going to be. It's probably why we see, you know, have our homeless problem and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Among other reasons.
And things might be changing. But anyway, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Tokens Radio Show on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we will see you in a few minutes.
Budget cuts to firefight crews, pouring cash in green pursuits. Hydrants dry, the flames advance, Gavin's doing his little dance. Oh, California's burning bright, but Gavin's dancing in the light. Shimmy, shimmy, watch him go, leadership just for show.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Monte Cristo Classic No. 2. This Figueroa has been described as one of the world's great cigars, a silky Connecticut shade wrapper in combination with the best Dominican tobaccos form this perfectly constructed cigar. The smooth aroma of toasted almonds, vanilla, coffee, and spice round out this classic stick. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, and I'm here with the latest local updates. The City of Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce's request for supplemental funding failed during a City Council meeting Tuesday evening, spotlighting concerns about transparency and conflicts of interest. The Chamber sought funds to cover legal expenses incurred fighting a citizen's public records request. Despite receiving substantial public support through stipends, nominal rent, and free facility use, the Chamber contested the records request against their president's recommendation for transparency. The Chamber treasurer, who requested the funds and receives payment for bookkeeping services, created the nonprofit organization and has refused to open financial records for public review. The two council members voting in favor have close ties to the Chamber's executive board. 9 citizens formally opposed the funding, questioning whether an organization receiving significant public subsidies should resist transparency requirements. With this failed vote and mounting public pressure for transparency, the Chamber's relationship with the city remains uncertain. As local government agencies grapple with transparency issues, law enforcement in Shasta County is taking steps to increase accountability through technology. The Shasta County Sheriff's Department will implement body-worn cameras for 128 sworn officers and jail staff starting in April or May 2024 through a $2 million contract with Axon Enterprise. Sheriff Michael Johnson, who previously cited funding constraints, now supports the initiative for multiple reasons: documenting interactions, addressing liability concerns, and enhancing transparency. The department will hire 3 additional staff members to manage video storage and maintenance. While cameras won't be active during sensitive situations like coroner investigations, they will be standard equipment for officers. This follows the Reading Police Department's successful implementation of body cameras in 2023, which has generated approximately 95,000 videos. The initiative aligns with broader law enforcement trends, as body cameras are now mandated in 8 states nationwide. In another development involving county resources and oversight, Shasta County Supervisors voted 4-1 to hire Chris Street as a healthcare consultant under a $40,000 contract. County CEO Dave Rickert selected Street after interviewing two candidates from nine potential consultants approached, with six declining due to budget constraints. Street, a county resident and former Orange County treasurer tax collector, is expected to deliver healthcare recommendations within 6 months, with a final report due in July. The decision sparked debate, with supporters citing Street's experience and cost-effectiveness. At the same time, critics questioned his qualifications and raised concerns about his previous withdrawal for consideration for the county CEO position in 2023. Supervisor Matt Plummer committed to monitoring the project through regular updates with Street. While the county addresses internal healthcare consulting needs, officials are also turning their attention to external environmental challenges. The Shasta County Board of Supervisors issued a letter to address wildfire mitigation challenges on federal lands in California. The letter outlines concerns about regulatory delays hampering fire mitigation efforts on federally managed lands. The board highlights that burdensome regulations from the Bureau of Land Management, BLM, and U.S. Forest Service are slowing critical fire mitigation projects, including environmental reviews, permitting processes, and vegetation management efforts. The letter notes that Shasta County is particularly vulnerable due to its large tracts of federal land, despite proactive efforts by CAL FIRE Shasta Trinity Unit. The board requests streamlined regulations for fuel reduction projects, increased funding for fire prevention on federal lands, and enhanced collaboration between federal, state, and local agencies. They emphasize that removing unnecessary barriers could help protect California communities and reduce wildfire costs. That's our brief for today, but the news doesn't stop here. Want to know what else is happening in Shasta County? Follow us on social media for exclusive stories and updates. Find us at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X. Until next time, this is your Town Hall Brief.
On a dark, smoky freeway, pollution in the air, endless miles of U-Hauls, leaving despair. Up ahead in the distance, I saw a broken light. My wallet's empty, my rights are gone. I'm fleeing here tonight. There is good in Sacramento, Gettysburg on display. I came for his promises of equity and better way. He said he taxed the rich and helped the poor get.
And we're back.
It's great bumper music.
You know, it's a fire environment rich when it comes to certain things, environment out there. So anyway, yeah, I saw that and it's like, okay.
Our
anyway,
state's like a gift that keeps on giving, right?
Yeah, especially our governor.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, there were some other ones, but I thought I'd better not play them. I thought they were a little bit out of the, over the top, out of the park, however you want to put that. So, all right. Anyhow, this segment is sponsored by the Anderson VFW Post. Since 1899, the veterans of foreign wars have been fighting for veterans' rights, from creating the VA to securing benefits for today's service members. Planning an event? The Anderson VFW Post would love to host you. Give them a call at 530-365-9650, and they will take good care of you. And we have one coming this Saturday. They're going to be helping us.
Yeah.
Take on our fundraiser.
Yes.
Great people.
Yeah, they are.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, indeed. Well, as you know, these executive orders are just causing quite a Twitter. Literally, in financial
no
circles, yes. So Trump's call for a federal wealth fund opens new questions about government involvement in markets. And the plan would allow federal investment in stocks and even cryptocurrency. While supporters see it as a path to debt reduction and dollar stability, critics warn it would become a massive slush fund outside voter control. So Peter St. Ong pointed this out, and of course we love Peter, and let's hear what he has to say.
Donald Trump signed an executive order establishing a sovereign wealth fund. Will the federal government start building a pile of treasure and Bitcoin to match up against this $36 trillion mountain of debt? So a sovereign wealth fund is a government-run investment fund that can hold stocks, bonds, and other assets like real estate and, yes, Bitcoin. There are hundreds of these worldwide, including about one in four countries and half of U.S. states. The biggest are oil-producing countries like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Norway, where they set aside a hunk of oil revenue. East Asian exporters also have them stashing excess dollars since they export much more to the U.S. than they import, so they have a bunch of leftover dollars. Some of these funds are very big, so Norway's sovereign wealth fund has $1.7 trillion, which is about 7 times of Norway's national debt and comes to almost $700,000 per household in Norway. Gulf Arab countries have a bunch of funds totaling nearly $5 trillion. China's funds hold about $2.8 trillion, while tiny Singapore has $2.1 trillion, which includes Social Security funds, which Singapore does not piss away the way we do here in America. Hong Kong, Korea, Malaysia, even Australia all have sovereign wealth funds. As for U.S. states, 23 states have some form of sovereign wealth fund, holding a total of $300 billion in assets. The biggest is Alaska, which salts away some of its oil revenue and hands out a check every year to Alaskans, called the Alaska Permanent Fund, that has over $72 billion, which is almost $300,000 per household in Alaska. Every year it sends out several $1,000s to Alaska, which is a drop in the bucket, but it helps with the famously high cost of living. Now, most other states also fund their sovereign wealth funds with oil and mineral rights like Texas, Wyoming, or North Dakota. A few are funded by tobacco settlements or unclaimed properties. Of course, a federal fund would dwarf all of these, given that Washington is already sitting on nearly $6 trillion in assets. That's nothing compared to its $36 trillion debt, but it would still make it by far the largest sovereign wealth fund in the world overnight. These assets include cash, deliverables, about $1.2 trillion in buildings and structures, most of it empty since federal workers don't actually come to the office, and student loans worth nearly $2 trillion. That would be the ones Biden has not canceled to buy votes. Into this giant pot, Trump is floating to pour tariff revenue, and he even suggested the federal government take a share of TikTok in return for letting it operate in the U.S. That could be a pattern for other foreign companies, especially Chinese, give the feds a share and you can operate. Trump's sovereign wealth fund will probably happen, and soon. Depending what assets it buys, it could quickly turn a profit. Trump's already promised a Bitcoin reserve, and stakes in TikTok or other companies might give taxpayers some juicy returns while converting federal assets from a $6 trillion graveyard to a way to reduce the cost of the federal government. Still, Trump will not be president forever. This does risk building a $6 trillion slush fund that's liable to future corruption and mismanagement, given governments are famously bad and corrupt at managing money. In which case, why not just pawn the assets and reduce the national debt? So if a sovereign fund is a step to that, it is a winner. If not, there's a lot that could go wrong.
So some people might look at this and say, gosh, this guy is just off the rails. You know, it's just, he's got too much control.
People on the other side are starting to say that he's way out of control here.
And we're having a constitutional crisis. But just if you're on that side of things, he has every right to do this. This is within his executive powers. And we'll find out in court. But my point that I wanted to make on this is that I heard this today, and part of explaining going all in on things, mm-hmm. right? Is that this is Trump's way of negotiating. So when he is floating an idea, his idea is floated with the maximum return. So it's either going to be a 90 or 100% end result in his mind. But he knows he has to give something up. So if he just went ahead and says, well, I just want a little bit of this and maybe accepting 50% of his grand idea and knowing he's going to be talked down and he ends up with 25 or 10% of it, then we're not going to get really far. And that's how things have been done for all of our life. So his position and why he's been so successful and able to make the big deals is that he floats these grand ideas. He knows he's not going to get 100% out of it. But he's going to get a larger share because he started on the far end.
Right. A great negotiator.
Yes.
You know, but stop and look at it. We all do that, especially like when it comes to real estate or anything like that. We all think that our property is worth more, or we see a bigger picture because we know that we're going to have to come down too. We kind of pad that into a lot of things ourselves.
We do. I think we. That's a good point, Linda. But I think what we might be, to take your analogy, we might be going, well, we might be asking too much. The market may not be able to bear it.
Right.
Now, he has, like, he doesn't give two mm-hmms.
Right.
Exactly. He just goes, I'm just going to ask. I'm asking for the max, right?
Right, because he knows. Again, you know, if you want to get to point B, you have to start at point A. You can't go back up. You can't go 50% and try to get 60.
Right. Yeah.
But you can go 100 and go to 60.
Yes.
You know, so that's just the way
that
works.
Those price increase philosophies don't always pan out. But, you know, just bringing it home. This is bringing us home. Just sit back, relax, let the courts do their job. Let Trump do the job he was elected to do. Have some popcorn. Go get your favorite beverage and sit back and watch the show. It's fascinating.
It is. And, yeah, don't just jump on everything right away.
Yeah. Because
there's so many cycles going here. There is so many different moving parts.
There's many moving
parts. Yeah. You know, sometimes when you do something over here, it creates something over here, or, you know, it affects something else that you don't see right away. And then you go, oh, I got it now. I understand.
Taking $6 trillion in assets and employing them right away, and then all of a sudden you have the largest fund in the world. I'm sure that that was bells and whistles in his head, right? But, you know, then you're going to have those on the other side that says, no, you just can't do that. So what if this starts off at $4 or $3 trillion in assets, right? It's still a win.
Well, I find it amazing you got Donald Trump. I don't know what he's worth, but he's got some money.
Well, yeah, since his technology company has taken off, his single-digit billions of worth is now in double digits.
Right. And then you got Elon.
Right.
And I'm just saying,
the richest man in the world.
The richest man in the world. And like you say, bring it home. They're not stupid people. They wouldn't be in their position if they were stupid and didn't kind of know how to negotiate and work deals and effects and things like that. So give them some credit. Give them some time.
Elon is a genius, and the man doesn't sleep much. And when he does sleep, he just picks up a floor and sleeps on it. And Trump has tapped into that brilliance, and Elon Musk has been able to hire some other brilliant people to do the job for us.
Yeah.
I feel so blessed by that.
Yeah, and you've got to give them a little bit of time. I mean, how many days in are we? We're not even a month in, okay?
It's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on?
Yeah, I mean, this is another big one here.
Yeah, the crypto owl czar, David Sacks.
No, that's AI czar.
AI.
Yeah.
I did that before. AI. Why do I do that? Anyway, press conference. A critical shift is emerging in America's financial landscape. While headlines focus on on Bitcoin reserves, stable coin issuers are quietly becoming major buyers of U.S. Treasury bonds, filling the gap left by declining Chinese and Japanese purchases. Pompliano from the Pump Letter explains how this is going to work or is working.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So here we go. So let's give a listen. Short clip here.
The crypto industry has become essential to national security. That is one of my big takeaways from the first press conference held by crypto and AI czar David Sacks. Most people are focused on the strategic Bitcoin reserve, which I believe will happen in 2025. But that is not the most interesting part of Sacks' focus from my perspective. The Bitcoin reserve will help the United States over the long term. That is obviously important. However, we have short-term issues we need to address, too. One of the big issues is demand for U.S. treasuries. China and Japan used to be 22% of treasury demand, but they have recently fallen as low as 7% of the demand. That is important to watch because nation-states and their central banks tend to be price-insensitive buyers. Now, State Street, they produced a research report in 2024 that highlighted the issue. Growing U.S. federal budget deficits and higher refinancing costs are bringing renewed attention to the U.S. treasury market. Over the next decade, an estimated $2 trillion of net issuance is expected annually. This issuance will take place in a market environment quite different from that of the 2010s, where price-insensitive buyers such as the U.S. Federal Reserve and foreign central banks were the sources of increased demand. This landscape has shifted with the end of quantitative easing and reduced foreign reserve accumulation. By simple arithmetic, price-sensitive buyers such as U.S. households and corporates are expected to account for a growing share of treasury investors. Now, thankfully, we are watching a net new buyer of treasuries show up right when the United States needs them the most. That is stablecoin issuers. Stablecoin issuers are already a top 20 holder of U.S. treasuries collectively. This trend is accelerating in recent years. So there's a strong argument that stablecoin issuers will be a top 10 holder in short order. But don't take my word for it, though. David Sacks said he believes stablecoins could ensure U.S. dollar dominance globally, increase the U.S. use of dollars as the global reserve currency, and create trillions of dollars in demand for U.S. treasuries as well. Now, given the potential positive impact from stablecoins, it makes sense that lawmakers are focusing their time and effort on creating stablecoin frameworks to accelerate that aspect of crypto. This brings me to the national security component of crypto. It is essential that stablecoins continue to become popular. The demand for U.S. treasuries depends on it. Bitcoin is going to serve the exact role that it was created for, a perfect store of value to protect economic value over the long run. But stablecoins are a short-term solution to a bigger problem on the horizon for the United States. Dare I say, stablecoins are too big to fail now. The United States has to play ball, so they are taking the right steps to embrace the industry rather than fight it. Issuing stablecoins will be a great business. Having stablecoins buy your treasuries will be a great transaction. And stablecoins will improve the financial experience for billions of people globally. Bitcoin is for saving. Stablecoins are for spending. A digital savings account and a digital checking account. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
Bitcoin for saving, stablecoins for spending.
Yeah, that kind of puts it in a very simplified, easy to understand way for people to go,
definitely.
Okay, I don't, you know, before they didn't know what it was or didn't understand it, I don't think, a lot of people.
Well, when we were first introduced to stablecoins, it was an interesting time. It was about 4.5 years ago, and it was like, well, what do you use these for? Well, it's when you come out of your investment and you're making a gain, you might want to lock that gain in by selling your Bitcoin, for instance, or your cryptocurrency and holding it in stablecoin. Because then it's now paired to the dollar. And then you can go ahead and employ your stable coins because it's already in a digital form, which is kind of weird that I'm saying that because our dollars are in digital form. But if for this discussion, it is digital currency, and then you can reemploy that and buy Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency with that.
Yeah, because stable coin is kind of pegged to a lot of different things, right?
Well, it's
not
supposed
just
to be
the dollar.
It's supposed to be pegged to the dollar.
An asset.
Yes, but they have assets that back that stable coin.
Okay.
Right.
So that helps that, yeah.
So there were several points that came away from this conference that they had. It was the first digital assets press conference, and we can breeze right through
these.
Yeah,
I like the idea that one of the first things was making digital assets and blockchain a priority. That's kind of not been on, it's been on the radar, but not really. Yeah. You know, it's been talked about, but not a priority. It's like, okay, we'll get to it when, you know, kind of thing. But no, being a priority, because not only does cryptocurrency come to play in a lot of different, but blockchain can be used for a lot of different things.
Sure. Yeah.
Not just Bitcoin.
Exactly. And there's various blockchains, private and,
right,
and public. Yeah, so definitely. And then they were talking about the need for regulatory clarity. So we've had some strugglings with that in the past because they didn't know what regulations they needed to follow.
Right.
And then there were some that were even personally debanked for just starting a crypto company. So getting that nailed down so that companies know what they need to do moving forward.
And then, you know, now we've got some congressional leaders that are on board with this to help with the regulations. You know, we got Senator Tim Scott, Congressman French Hill, Senator John Bozeman, Congressman G.T. Thompson. But it makes a big difference, you know, and they come from different areas, you know, banking, financial, agricultural. But my point being is now I think we're going to have kind of a set rules that are black and white instead of, well, maybe, or could be, or if, you know, this is how it's going to be handled. It's going to be, nope, this, and this.
And these are bipartisan. I mean, they're on both sides of the aisle. Yeah, so, and that's good. We want our legislators to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And then important recognition of different types, that not all cryptocurrencies are the same. Some are considered commodities, while others are considered securities, and they need to be regulated differently based on their classification, so that needs to be ironed out.
Right. Then we got the strategic Bitcoin reserve, which we've talked about many times. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of discussion being created around that. And the administration right now plans to evaluate the idea as one of their first priorities as well.
Needs to happen, and focusing on education. A lot of our government leaders don't really understand this. They're getting better, but some don't have even the education that we have on this, and that's scary because they're making these decisions. So there's importance of educating Congress members about cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, and they plan to bring in industry experts to help them with the education process and get up to speed.
Which is important.
Yes, it's essential.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's America's leadership goal. There's a strong emphasis on ensuring the United States leads in cryptocurrency innovation. That's very important. We've talked about it in the past, how important that is. Rather than falling behind other countries, we need to be on first base first.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
They compared this to how America led the development of early internet web 1.0 and social media era web 2.0.
Yeah. So we're on 3.0. You know, a slight pivot from the rest of this content here is, you know, it's just breaking news and talking about Tether.
Oh, yes.
But just wanted to share this. You know, Rumble closed a deal with Tether for $775 million, a strategic investment from Tether. And it was a press release that came out on the 7th of February, and it was making it through X yesterday. And so their strategic investment of USDT, largest company in digital assets industry and most widely used dollar stablecoin across the world with more than 400 million users. And guess who was involved in this as their advisor? Cantor Fitzgerald.
Gerald, that's right.
The largest, private, dealer out there.
Yeah.
In the world for this type of stuff. Oppenheimer was involved.
That's a big one too. Yeah. They're not small peas in that one either.
And some legal counsel, obviously. And then there was legal counsel, you know, Cantor Fitzgerald, obviously. And
wow, I mean, Rumble has had a big growth in the last few years. That's for sure, and it's not slowing down at all.
So I'm wondering if you're looking like at Telegram. You know, they had their own cryptocurrency, you know, their own token. And I'm wondering if Tether is going that way. So I'm sure more is going to be coming out about this, but I find it very interesting. That's a huge investment. And obviously Tether seeing the benefit of Rumble. I believe Rumble is the number one video platform, even though by numbers it is not yet. But it is definitely where freedom reigns
in the
video world.
It's not censored. You don't have to worry about anything over there. I mean, so many more people are moving over there. I forget who it was today. It was some show. They said, it was a health show. I know what it was. They got kicked off of YouTube.
Yeah.
So now they're looking at Rumble because they were just doing a health video, a podcast thing.
So the fact checkers came in and decided what they were saying was not truthful
or whatever. We don't like you. You wore, brown today and I wanted you to wear green. Whatever it is.
Right.
The fact is that they're doing that and the people are getting wise and going someplace else.
It's amazing how a giant like that's going to be knocked down. I mean, they've been talking about it for a long time. And another bit of news, is Parler came back online today.
That's what you were saying.
You can go into the Google Play Store and pick up a Parler again. So that was the first social media site that was about freedom, and they got debanked, if you will, a couple of years ago because they allowed people to speak their mind on their platform.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting again, like we talked earlier, about different things that are happening.
Yeah.
Just give it a little bit of time. Well,
sure.
while the trees are being shook, what's going to drop out, you know, and where we're going.
Yeah.
How we're getting there.
Yeah, it is exciting times, and what a time to be alive and seeing all of this happen.
Who would ever guess?
Yeah.
Hey, I guess we did it again. Here's we have another one in a can. So thank you. We appreciate y'all, and we will see you next week.
Thank you, Ben.
To say, and we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be, he gave us all a protocol this world has never seen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.